Welcome to Right Here in Mass. We're a weekly podcast that features individuals throughout the Bay State who are on our radar and should be on yours. From the Berkshires to Boston, Cape Cod and the islands, tune in to learn about who you should know right here in Mass. Welcome back to another episode of Right Here in Mass. Joining me today is Liam Martin, an Emmy Award-winning journalist who spent 15 years in television news before joining Newsmaker Marketing as co-owner in March of 2024. Liam has a very extensive and impressive bio that's found in our show notes. But Liam, I would love to welcome you to the show and give you the opportunity to share with our listeners more about yourself and what you do.
Thanks for having me, Ashley. Yes, I spent 15 years, as you said, in television news. Started out in Lansing, Michigan, market 115, and made my way to Boston, where I grew up. I got to my dream job at WBZ as the morning anchor a few years back. And then after 3 years on the show, decided to throw it all away. Mm-hmm. And just got to a place with my mental health and my work-family balance that I didn't feel was in line with my priorities. And so I decided to leave and started up a company with Jackie Bruno and Rachel Robbins doing storytelling, public relations, social media storytelling, and digital advertising. And it was definitely a leap of faith. But I, having now started my own business and, you know, working for myself, I don't think I would ever go back.
Yeah, I think that's something that's really important that you mentioned is just being able to work for yourself. I mean, there's so many benefits that you get that you wouldn't get with having an employer or a 9-to-5 or whatever it might be. And so I'm curious to hear about starting Newsmaker Marketing. Did you leave your news job and then start it? Or did you start Newsmaker Marketing before leaving, if that makes sense? Like, I'm just curious to hear about the transition and really its origin story.
Yeah, so it's a little bit of a mix. So what happened is, about a year into my role as the morning anchor at WBZ, I started to realize that I wasn't going to be able to do it long term. So I was up at 2 o'clock in the morning. I was trying to get in bed at 7:30 at night. I've got two young kids, and I just felt like it was no longer tenable for my mental health, my physical health. I've struggled with obsessive compulsive disorder for all of my life. And that had gotten really bad, partly as a result of the overnight schedule and partly just the pressures of the job. You know, there's all kinds of research about what the graveyard shift does to the body, does to the mind. And some people do it and they can do it for 30 or 40 years as a career and they are fine. And other people are more impacted by it. I was one of those. And so about a year into the job, I recognized, I don't think I can keep doing this. I had the opportunity to go back to evenings, but that would mean that I wouldn't see my kids other than on the weekends. And so I started to think about an exit plan. And I was applying to all kinds of jobs that journalists typically apply to, which is, you know, public relations, go to work for an agency. And the opportunities either weren't coming to me, I wasn't getting the jobs because I didn't have the right experience, or the pay wasn't what it needed to be, or, you know, it was going to be in a location I was going to have to move the family. There were all these considerations. At the same time, my good friend Jackie Bruno was also transitioning out of TV news, and she was trying to figure out what to do next. We were texting daily about what that might be, and she was applying to stuff and not getting it as well. And finally, a small business owner friend of hers said, hey, if you could run my social media pages and maybe do some public relations for me, I would pay you a monthly retainer. And then a second business owner friend of hers said the same. Then I was walking with my neighbor, who happens to own Lunch Dates, a matchmaking service in the city. And he said, you know, actually, I could use that too. We've been thinking about doing that. And before we knew it, we had three or four small business owners who wanted to work with us. And I said to Jackie, I think there might be a business here. And before we knew it, we were, you know, coming up with the name and trying to build a website. So I was moonlighting. I was still doing my job because money from Newsmaker wasn't where it needed to be yet. We didn't have enough accounts. And so I would do the job during the day, and then at night I'd be working on trying to build the business. And that took like a year and a half to really get it to a point where I felt like financially I can make this jump without too big of a risk to the family. And we quickly noticed that the old way of doing public relations wasn't really working for businesses anymore, which was, it's called spray and pray, where you're just sending out press releases about the business and hoping that some media outlet picks it up and calls you, and you're just sending those out. And we wanted to take a much more personal approach. Jackie and I had both spent 15 years in television news in Boston. We got to know a lot of people. We said, I think this might work better if we're texting people we know and saying, I actually have a really good story for you. And the social media and video storytelling aspect of it as well, that a lot of public relations firms were not offering that service. And we had, again, spent 15 years telling stories for our careers, and we felt like we can take those skills and apply that to telling the story of a business. And 2 years later, the business was big enough that I could actually quit my full-time job and make this my full-time job.
Yeah, and I think it's amazing to think about how you and Jackie were in like the exact same situation, and it goes to show that it was probably divine timing that you two had left your jobs at the same time and were thinking about what's new, to be able to build something like Newsmaker Marketing together.
Absolutely. And then, it's funny, we knew nothing about starting a business. I've always said that I make a better employee than employer. I think, my way of approaching the world is, you tell me what to do and I will do it really well. Being the person who is telling others what to do and trying to figure out how to delegate and have more of a bird's eye view on things is not necessarily in my wheelhouse. It is in Jackie's wheelhouse. And then what we discovered as we started was we need someone with a bit more of the business experience and the actual public relations experience that knows how to, we know how to make phone calls and I can figure out how to write a press release or whatever. We need someone that has that experience. And Jackie just happened to know a friend who also used to be in TV news in another lifetime named Rachel Robbins. And we had a conversation with her. Jackie and I at that point were 50-50 owners of the company. And so we had this conversation with Rachel. And I think in that first conversation, we said, okay, it's going to be a third, a third, a third, because we were so impressed with her and just felt this sense of trust right away and the realization that we needed what she brought to the table. And so it was, yeah, when you say divine intervention, I don't know if I believe in any of that, but it at times has felt like maybe there's something going on here because we found each other and we all were in this place in our lives where we wanted to focus more on our families and we wanted to be able to be more present and determine our own fates. And we all met at that same time. And now we've, been in business together for more than 2 years and it's going great.
Absolutely. And I always love chatting with business owners who have co-founders because I think they bring a really unique and interesting perspective to the business conversation. And you brought up a good point about how you, Jackie, and Rachel all complement each other with your strengths and weaknesses and really balance each other out in that sense. But I'm curious to hear for anyone listening who may be considering bringing on co-founders for their business, what are the other benefits you found in doing so, or even any advice you have for them with navigating this?
Okay, so you got to get an operating agreement. That's number one. And that is a tough process because, Jackie, Rachel, and I all love one another, but you also want to make sure you're protecting yourself and your family and your financial future. And so those were some awkward conversations, figuring out how exactly the business was going to be broken up. And if someone, something even as practical as like someone dies, what happens? And you're having to work through each of those with an attorney. And I would recommend getting an attorney that represents the business as opposed to representing one of you. And then take that operating agreement and find an attorney, a friend of yours, someone in the family who can quickly skim it and make sure that it works for you as well, not just for the business. So that would be the first order of operations. Get your operating agreement, have those difficult, sensitive conversations. You'll learn a fair amount about the priorities of your partners during the course of that too, and how much trust they have in you. And I think it was probably the best thing we did among the three of us, because it did establish that trust and it gave us that foundation of, we have an operating agreement. It lays out exactly what happens with the business, the finances of the business, who has what powers. And it gives you that foundation to continue to run the company from there. In terms of, general advice on working with a co-founder, you're going to have disagreements. And it's all about how you communicate those disagreements and maintain respect for one another, have that open line, and be very careful about who it is that you're choosing. Try to find someone, as you were saying, who maybe makes up for some of your shortcomings, has some strengths that you don't have, and choose carefully.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, is just like you mentioned, really having a clear vetting process ultimately, because these are the people that you'll be in business with for a long time moving forward. So I think you brought up great points about like the operating agreement, and then also knowing how to navigate any of those difficult conversations or disagreements that might come up to keep things running smoothly ultimately.
Absolutely. I think it's, there have been times, I'm sure, for every business owner where you wonder, well, would it have made more sense? Should I go do this on my own? Should I, And it's really nice to have someone else to bounce things off of, to share decisions with. I think the three of us really help one another in moments where, someone's got a sick kid and they can't get the work done that day. The other two are going to pick it up, and vice versa. So it is nice to share this crazy journey with other people.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned earlier that your experience in news definitely had that transferable skill with being able to pick up the storytelling piece and experience, and then also having like contacts that you had from being in the news world. But I'm interested in hearing what other qualities or skills that you think kind of have translated over into your marketing agency from being in news for so long.
I think I love that question, because I think journalists are so undervalued as workers when they get out of journalism. The number of jobs I applied to where people said, you don't have PR experience, technically. And my response to that would be, I have all the public relations experience in the world. I get on a desk every day and communicate with people the stories. I understand how to take a complicated topic and boil it down in a way that people can understand. I write my own stories. There's a writing aspect to it. I have videography and editing skills. I know how to work on deadline. I have to be disciplined. I have to, work as a team. And there's a whole ethic to being a journalist that can translate to other aspects of life. So I think journalists are really undervalued. And again, the number of conversations I had, and Jackie had the same experience, people saying, yeah, you don't have the right experience for this. And that is such a myopic view of things. I think, you're almost always better off going after someone who, displays the qualities you would want in an employee versus the experience that you would want. When we first started working with our one full-time employee, Michaela, and bringing her on was a financial risk, because we had to pay her and get health insurance, and the business was still growing, and we didn't know how many clients we were going to keep, and so we had this whole conversation, the three of us, about bringing on Michaela. And it was so clear within the first week the value that she brought. And our conversation ahead of time had been, well, she hasn't technically worked in public relations, or she didn't come from the news world the way we did. But what she was willing to do was to learn and to be conscientious and be positive. And when we asked her to do something, she was willing to say, "I don't know how to do that. Can you help me?" Or she would take initiative on learning how to do those things. You know, that person is more valuable 100 times over than the person who has the experience, but maybe not those qualities.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's such an interesting point that you bring up that journalists are undervalued because my first thought was, wow, journalists are coming from the other side. So they know a pitch or a story that's going to hit right with a publication or a news source that's going to want to feature the client or the business or whatever. So I think you're right that there is kind of like a stigma, I'd say. But you and your team members have certainly showed the benefits of being able to bring the experience that you have in the news world to marketing and public relations and communications.
And to know the thing, that's a great point. And to know the thing about the story that will interest the reporter. So, the number of times we've been in a meeting with a potential client who has worked with a PR firm in the past and did not have a great experience. And, you know, we had this initiative that we were launching and we thought we could maybe get some coverage for it and we just didn't get anything or we didn't get what we thought we should. And I'll say, "Okay, so what was the initiative?" And they'll walk me through it. And I'll go, "I can text, I mean, it's not to brag, I can text 5 people right now in the news and make this a story." And it's because I understand from 15 years of doing it what it is about that initiative that is going to get their attention, as opposed to just like a press release that says, "We're launching this initiative." You got to find the thing it is that will connect with that reporter, you know their beat, you know what it is they might be interested in, and communicating that part of the story to them. And sometimes it can just be a text message that's 2 sentences as opposed to a press release that gets sent out to everyone.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you brought that up because I feel like that's a something I'd like to dive deeper into is like for anyone listening who may have either tried to DIY their PR or have worked with another firm before that just didn't get coverage. Like, what advice would you have for them for being able to craft a pitch that's actually going to land properly?
Huh, that's interesting. Yeah. So in our case, it's often I get the pitch from the company that wants to get coverage, and I'll kind of know right away, okay, this is where I want to go with this. For someone who doesn't have that experience, honestly, the best advice I would give is to DM through Instagram or whatever, DM some reporters. Go through, you know, Boston 25, WCVB, WBZ, find some of the reporters on Instagram who might cover that type of story, follow them on Instagram, and then DM them from your own account. The personal connection is so important. And to say, "You know, I've enjoyed watching you, and I actually have a story that I think could be interesting to you." That personal outreach to that reporter goes a long way. They're much less likely to ignore that. The number of times, I mean, I would say 2,000 to 3,000 emails a day
Oh my
as a whole.
gosh.
Yes. And so much of my day was just figuring out ways to filter and delete, you know. And so I would read maybe 5% of the emails that I got because the rest were filtered out. If something came in from Cision, which is this, it's this platform that allows you to send press releases to all the press, it was an instant delete, you know. So finding a way to make it personal and not through their email typically, I think is the best bet.
Yeah, that's a really good piece of advice, especially because I can imagine from your perspective, when you were receiving pitches that had nothing to do with something you would typically cover. I mean, that's definitely a huge turnoff for a journalist or any type of publication is when it's clear that the person who's pitching them hasn't done any type of research on them.
Yeah, and it doesn't take, you know, that long, right? So, and you're going to have much more impact. So if your previous plan was, "I'm going to write a press release and send it through the wires to 100 news organizations," maybe you get a hit from that. I think you're better off. That takes a fair amount of time figuring out what's going to be in the press release, who's going to be the press contact, putting the dates on it, getting quotes from people, whatever. I think you're better off spending that time figuring out five reporters who might want to cover this from five different stations and following them on Instagram and DMing them. They're only going to get, 5 to 10 DMs a day, depending on how active they are on Instagram. They're going to get 1,000 emails. So you're much more likely to stand out to them on Instagram. And again, there's something about that personal outreach. Include something in the DM about them, their experience. If you've seen a story of theirs or whatever, you can mention that. Obviously, don't be inauthentic, but to the extent you can make it personal and that you're connecting directly with them because this story might be of interest to them, it's so much more likely to land.
Yes, absolutely. And on the topic of stories, I've had the pleasure of having a few of Newsmaker clients on the show.
Yeah.
And knowing that you work with quite a few pretty cool clients, I'm curious to hear, without picking favorites, some of your campaigns that you've worked on for clients that you've been really proud of or have brought really cool results.
Oh man,
It
there are
probably
so
must be
many.
hard for you. That's probably a tough question.
Yeah, so one that I'll give a few that come to mind. So Runway for Recovery is a breast cancer organization based in Newburyport, Mass. And what they do is hold events, usually runway events, where the models are breast cancer patients or members of their family if the person has passed. And they hold them in Boston, LA, and New York City. So this year they were launching in LA. They were going to do their first runway show out there. And it just so happened that the LA wildfires broke out right as they were getting ready to ramp up the press to announce this event and try to get people there. So what we did as Newsmaker Marketing is said, why don't you take the press that you were going to do about the runway show and instead get press about how you are raising funds for people in LA who are breast cancer patients and affected by the wildfires, which there were a ton of them, of course. Unfortunately, so many people were impacted that you also had a lot of women who were going through breast cancer treatment who
Yeah.
now were homeless or had lost all their resources or they couldn't go to work, whatever it was. So we put that story on every television station in Boston. There's a local organization that is working to help breast cancer patients impacted by the LA wildfires. And they raised something like $50,000, and the LA stations picked it up. And then a pro golfer, Wyndham Clark, happened to see the coverage. His mom died of breast cancer. He made a huge donation to Runway for Recovery. And the LA event became this huge success for their inaugural runway show and helped raise money for people who desperately needed it. So that one was, a real standout case of the way good public relations and video storytelling, because we story told around that as well, can make a huge impact. Another one that comes to mind, we work for Medford Wellington, which is based in Billerica. They're a commercial services company. They do HVAC, plumbing, electrical. And when they came to us and said, we just feel like our name isn't out there enough. We want to build some buzz and we want to recruit more technicians, HVAC techs specifically. Because what has happened is there's a skilled labor shortage. There aren't enough people going into the trades. And this has hampered Medford Wellington's ability to grow. So they came to us and said, one of the goals of our program is that we want to expand our workforce and recruiting. And so internally, we're going, how are we going to get press for a commercial HVAC company? Home HVAC, you can get press because in the summer, you do some stories about, HVAC, and if there's a storm coming, you try to get them on the news talking about that, and you can find ways in. But for commercial HVAC, it's tough. So what we did is we focused in on this skilled labor shortage. Medford Wellington has a program where it's effectively an old school apprenticeship where you can go get trained in one of the trades. You're paid for that. When you're done with the training, you have a job full time with Medford Wellington. And within a few years, you can make a six-figure salary. So we went to WBZ in Boston and NBC Boston and pitched this story. Come send a reporter, have them go through the training for a day so that it's a hands-on experience, and tell the story of the skilled labor shortage in this local company that's trying to get creative to figure out a solution. So the story aired on WBZ, and then maybe a week later it was on NBC Boston. NBC Boston then posted the story on their TikTok page, and for whatever reason, it went like wildfire and had 2 million views on TikTok. Typically, Medford Wellington will get, maybe a few hundred applications in the course of a year for these HVAC tech jobs. The next day after the NBC Boston story aired, they had hundreds of applications in a day.
Wow.
So, again, it is the power. I think over time, unfortunately, local television news has lost traction and it doesn't have the impact it did, but it still does have a big impact when you get that coverage. And the important thing about that is to then take that coverage and get it over onto social media as well, which is exactly what happened with the Medford Wellington story. It goes up on the NBC Boston page. It gets that many more views and has that much more impact. So those are two of, hundreds of examples we could give of some of the fun impacts we've had from the work we do.
Yeah. And with both of those examples, I'd say a common denominator between them is just the importance of being creative. Like you said, with Runway for Recovery being able to kind of showcase all the work that they were doing during the LA wildfires to kind of help bring awareness to that important work that they were doing. But then also with Medford Wellington, thinking about how you could tie back the labor shortage and be able to bring light to the great program that they had. And so I think that's a really great skill that you kind of alluded to, is just being able to have that quick thinking and creative thinking to make it happen.
In that background, it helps to have the background in knowing what it is that the press will be interested in. So in LA, our plan all along had been, let's just do a story about this runway show because that's engaging enough. It's touching. They're raising money for women going through metastatic breast cancer. So that story is compelling on its own. Then the LA wildfires break out and you go, they will not do any coverage of this because they're inundated with coverage of the wildfires. And so you got to find a different way in. And so you link it to the wildfires and go, hey, we're actually going to raise money for this cause and still help women with breast cancer and put on this great event. So yeah, you get to know over time what it is, how to tweak it so that, and sometimes it's taking a little bit of a risk. So we have another client in New Hampshire that's an aesthetics company. So they do injectables and facials, that kind of stuff. Very tough to get coverage for that in the news because, why is the news going to care about this luxury item that, some people can't afford? And there's a stigma that it's just, it's narcissistic or whatever.
Yeah,
So,
superficial. Yeah, I know what you mean.
yeah. So it's tough to get coverage. And this client, the owner had happened to work as a nurse during COVID. So she was in emergency rooms, every day, the way nurses and doctors were, for 24-hour shifts. And, it was obviously a very tough time for nurses and doctors. When she got out, she started up this, she had already started up the company, but went back to work as a nurse when COVID broke out. So what we said was, well, why don't you have a day where you pamper nurses? So the community can nominate a nurse in their family or a friend of theirs, whatever, and you pick two that come in for the day and get massages and facials and they get a hair treatment, whatever it is that they want, and they're treated like royalty for the day as they should be. And we labeled it the Pampered Project. And they did exactly that. They had, a bunch of nominations. They selected two nurses who had worked throughout COVID and these real heroes and brought them in for the day. And then of course the press was interested now. And so not only do you do this great thing for these two nurses who gave up so much, but the press is coming in and talking about what you're doing and that many more eyeballs are now on your business. And maybe they want to come help support or the next time around, they want to nominate. We've had two or three Pampered projects since then. One of them, we focused on teachers instead. And so, yeah, there's always, you do have to find a way to, with certain clients to tweak it and figure out how you could get the press and the public interested in what they're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a great thing to remember. And one of the things that I'm curious to hear too, for anyone who's looking to transition out of the news or out of journalism, whether they might be facing burnout like you had, or unfortunately with all the layoffs that have been going on, I'm curious to hear what advice you would have for someone who is looking to make that change and jump into a new industry.
My case was so unique because I didn't leave because I didn't like the job anymore. I left,
Right.
my mental health was at stake. And so I kind of, it's like my mental health made the decision for me, where I had to do this thing. I would say be confident in the skills that you bring to the table as a journalist, along the lines of what we were talking about before. Build your resume around those skills and highlight what it is that you bring to the table. So many companies right now are looking for people who, will one be conscientious and all that, but they can contribute to the social media of the company. They know how to do videography and often know how to do editing, and they know how to storytell. And again, bringing that curious mind into the workforce. So I think my biggest advice would be to just lean on those things that maybe other people don't know you bring to the table or value. They go, "Oh, you're a journalist. Okay, so you know how to do journalism really well." And I go, "No, I know how to do all kinds of things as a result of my work as a journalist. And my knowledge is so broad as a result of being a journalist, because one day you're covering politics and the next day it's a fire and the next day it's a union strike or whatever. So you're exposed to so many different things and learn so much as a result of that. You bring so much to the table, and I think I would just lean into that in interviews and in your resume."
I love that. And Liam, as we get closer towards the end of this episode, one of my favorite questions to ask our guests is what their favorite local businesses are to support. So I'm curious to hear what yours are.
Should I just list all my clients?
Good point.
I do love, they're not a client. I'll stay away from clients, just to keep it honest. I do love Olympia Diner in Braintree. They're a little mom and pop diner, right in downtown, and we've been going there since my kids were young, and they treat us well. Great food, and the prices are shockingly low. I hope to see them flooded this Sunday as a result of this. Who else is coming to mind? I love that you highlight local small businesses, though, because it's so easy to turn to like Amazon and Target, and there are so many of these small businesses out here that, put their heart and soul into it and give people jobs as a result of it. So I think I'll stick with Olympia Diner for now, but I'm hoping another will come to me before we fully wrap up.
All good. That's a good one. You can never go wrong with breakfast.
No, diner for me, diner coffee, that's the spot.
Oh, absolutely. Liam, this has been a really great episode, and I've really enjoyed having you on the show to share your really interesting story from news to going to newsmaker marketing. And now I'd love if you could share with our listeners where they can find you online in case they'd like to connect further.
Excellent. So you can always find us at Newsmaker Marketing. That's on Instagram and LinkedIn. You can find me on Instagram at LiamWBZ. And there's an interesting background to why it still says WBZ, which is that Meta is one of the worst companies in the world when it comes to customer service. And so I have tried to change my handle many, many times to something else, and they will not let me change it. So I'm still Liam WBZ, still representing the oldest TV news station in the country, and proud to do that. But you can find me at Liam WBZ on Instagram, and I'm on all the other platforms as well.
Perfect. I'll link to those places in the show notes so our listeners can easily click through and connect with you from there. But thank you so much again for coming on today's show.
Thanks for doing this, Ashley. I really appreciate it. And I think it's, like I said, it's so important to highlight local small businesses. So thank you for doing that.
Of course. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Right Here in Mass. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed recording it. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, follow us on social media, and share our podcast with your network. See you next week.